world famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we welcome onto our program Peter Moskus. Peter has written a book, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. Peter is currently an assistant professor of law and police science and criminal justice. In point of fact, he was a sociology graduate when he became a police officer for the city of Baltimore, and right now he is teaching at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And Peter, welcome to our show, and if I may call you Peter, I appreciate you being with us tonight, man, and I want to apologize to you. Last week we had such breaking news, we had to move our interview with you, but we're so grateful that you're with us tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Phil. It's great to be on your show.
It's a terrific book, man, and it's written, you know, you're a scholar, you're a scientist, you're a sociologist. And I love the beginning. The anecdote is beautiful. When you were there as a researcher, and the new administration moved in Baltimore City, and they said, "Now more researchers, get out of here." And one cop said to you, "Have you thought about why don't you just be a cop? Why don't you just become a cop?" And that became the impetus you needed to go ahead and join the Baltimore City Police. Peter, if you could, for just a minute, tell us where. I know where east, west, north, and south is, but describe for us Baltimore's eastern district. We're talking about a section of the city that you spent that year policing, a rough, crime-ridden area. Can you give us a general idea of where this is?
Yeah, the general idea for people who have seen The Wire, it's where a lot of the ghetto shots were filmed. So east and west Baltimore are very similar, except for the first letter in front of the street signs. But the part that I worked is, it's hardcore ghetto, and you know, some people object to that term, but if you think there
is... Yeah, you use that term a lot, yeah. Tell me why.
Well, because cops use the term, and then the people we're policing use the term. There are people in the ghetto who object to it because they say, "I'm not ghetto." And with all due respect to them, they're not, but nevertheless, East Baltimore is a ghetto. I mean, it's levels of violence and murder and drug dealing and just blight. About half of the district is just abandoned. A place that does not give you much hope. Partly just for that area and partly for America. It's a shame we have places like this.
You know, it's interesting. I remember the song that Randy Newman wrote back in the 70s called Baltimore. It's Baltimore has just, I guess, been our favorite. It's sort of the favorite place to reference when we talk about American urban decay.
Baltimore, it's not all their fault. They're a very open, welcoming city, and that's how I ended up there, and I think that's why, what other city would let someone come in and say, "Hey, guys, you've gotten a lot of bad publicity in the past, so let me be a cop for a year and then write a book about it." Baltimore, they let people in, and every city's got a ghetto. Maybe Baltimore's got a little more than other cities, or it's more extreme, but, I think that the problems of Baltimore are not unique to Baltimore. I mean, these are American problems.
Yeah. Hey, Peter, you did go into this experience after you went through police academy training, which is very funny. Mention in the book, Peter, you say that the movie Police Academy ain't too far from the reality, which I thought was pretty funny. But are you indicting specifically, well, not indicting, but the critique that you engage in this book is specific to Baltimore. And I wonder how much of this is rampant throughout municipal police forces across the country, or are these problems unique to Baltimore to the extent that you experience them?
I have yet to hear, and I mean, look, I'm sure every police academy is a little bit different. There's no reason they should be the same, but I have yet to hear from a single police officer who hasn't said anything, but yeah, that's how it is. And not only that, but sometimes the officers could have 20 years on, and they're saying that's how it was 20 years ago. It's amazing how slowly things like that change. And to make it clear, my book, Cop in the Hood, is not an indictment of policing in general, but I am pretty harsh on the police academy because it was, it was crappy.
Well, you do make the point that it did not prepare officers to deal with the reality of the street. There was a lot of spit and polish. There was a lot of saluting at the right time. There was a lot of nonsense that was not practical in terms of applying it to being a police officer. The story that you, and just to give people a taste of what happened to you, and I say happened to you, happened for you, happened within you during that year, is you were on scene at some kind of a shooting that involved 12 dead bodies, and
That's
all these years
all
later...
They lived. All but one.
They lived. Okay.
There were still 12.
But all these years later, you couldn't remember anything about it except the cigar that you smoked while you were there.
Because you deal with, I mean, look, there are not too many statistics in my books. It's readable, right? Help me out.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, very readable.
Even though I'm a professor, it's a good book. But one of the gee whiz stats in there, if you're a man born in East Baltimore, and that means if you're a black man, there's over a 10% chance you're going to get murdered before you're 35. And that doesn't take out, you know, not everybody's at risk even. That doesn't even take the non-at-risk people out of the game. So if you're out there slinging on the corner, you know, there's a good chance you're going to get killed. I mean, the 12-person shooting, it was, you know, it was an RIP party for another guy who had been shot. I mean, this cycle of violence, it just goes on. And at some point, as a police officer, I mean, you're there picking up a lot of the pieces, but there isn't that much difference, you know, 9 times out of 10 between one shooting and the next one.
Yeah. So, Peter, you would go out. Let me ask you a question about the police academy, and then we'll move on to your experience policing. Is the point of a police academy or this police academy just to get you in and then out into the field? How many potential officers are actually weeded out during this process? Not many, from what I gather.
Zero, and I keep hearing that about other police departments. And that, with the police academy, is when they have you, and they're paying you usually not a lot of money, but they're paying you your full salary. And I don't know what the number should be. There are 50 in my class. The bottom 10% should not have been police officers. And you could ask anyone in the class, and they'd probably point to pretty much the same 5 people. But the incentive to the academy is, look, no one wants to take the responsibility to fire someone, because then you get sued and then people complain. But the problems of letting officers who shouldn't be on the street is going to be far more expensive later. When they screw up, when they get caught for being a dirty cop, when they are involved in a bad police-involved shooting, the academy is where they should be weeding out cops, and they should be doing a better job training you. But they say, look, we're paid to push people through. You know, the people and personnel who hired you, it was their job to weed you out. No one's willing to sort of bite the bullet for the team.
Now, Peter, we need to remind the listeners, and we're talking to Peter Moskus, author of Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. And by the way, you got kudos from the guy who produces The Wire. What's the guy's name? George Pelicanos. Yeah.
Oh, Pelicanos. It was a great book. I just met the other two, by the way, the other day. Very nice guys, Simon and Ed Burns.
Hey, you never know, man. You're going to be on set now. You're going to be like a consultant and all of that. You know, you get producer credit, so watch it.
Ed Burns had 20 years on the force. I had 20 months, so it's a little bit different.
Oh, hey, there's a lot of cops that go into acting, as a matter of fact. But that's a discussion for another day. I wanted to ask you about now you go out onto the street. Now, all this time, you are the sociology graduate. You're taking notes. You're doing field research at the same time you're a police officer. So you go out, and then at home at night, you're trying to transcribe these notes. You're trying to put them into some form. And I imagine, as you mentioned in the book, some nights you were exhausted. Other nights you were good to go. But what was that like, man? That's almost like a double shift. That's almost like you're working two jobs.
Yeah, and that's why every night it didn't get done. I mean, the ideal researcher, you know, sits down diligently every night while sober and writes up his or her notes. But, I mean, I did have a job I was getting paid for. So, I mean, I wasn't, you know, while I was a cop, I was a cop, and you got to do that first.
Yes.
Conveniently, there is a lot of downtime in policing, even when you're working in sort of a high-action district. And you're also required to carry pen and paper. So, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can do on the shift, and then, you know, hopefully you've got an hour or so afterwards. But, you know, you do the best you can, and that's that. The point about that 12-person shooting was, that I didn't write any notes that night, because I thought, how can I forget that stuff? But, if you don't write it down, you do. But, I mean, I was there long enough that there's still plenty of stuff I did write down.
Well, that's the thing. You said pretty much one shooting is like another. Now, when the officers you ended up working with found out you were writing a book, were they resistant to associate themselves with you for fear of what you'd say? Were they more gregarious?
No, I mean, they were skeptical at first. They want to know what my intentions are, and the other is a natural and healthy level of mistrust, because how are they going to benefit from me being there? And
yes.
I don't know if they do. I was amazed at how supportive they were of me, and I didn't have any problems from them. And I think you got to do three things to be accepted, and it, and that's, and then it doesn't matter what you're doing. Mm-hmm. One is, you know, I don't want to swear on your radio show, don't be a jerk. Mm-hmm. Another is do your job, and, you know, it helps if you go out drinking after work. And I think if you have two of those three, you'll be fine. I had all three, so it was okay. But, you know, so I was still, I mean, I was in Baltimore last weekend, you know, I'm seeing guys I was in the academy with, I'm spending the night at my sergeant's house. So, I mean, I know, you know, this is now 8 years later. If they were putting up an act, they're still putting it up. It's a pretty good one. Look, as long as you're honest, I think police don't have a problem, because I didn't go in with an axe to grind. The book isn't a kiss and tell, but I didn't see any horrible behavior. You know, there's some bad behavior and there's some bad attitudes and some, you know, lazy policing, including by me.
Yeah.
But by and large, you see hardworking men and women who are doing their damnedest day in and day out and not accomplishing anything. And that's what's so frustrating about the job.
You know, Peter, I was thinking when I was reading your book of a story that an L.A. cop said to me. Well, it was an L.A. cop who I asked, what's it like being a cop? He says, you asked me what it's like being a cop in L.A.? I said, yeah. He said, it's like going out to a field of manure that's covered, that is surrounded by a chain link fence, and your job is to go and get as many flies as you can, and then go to the chain link fence and let them go outside the chain link fence. Now, obviously, that's a pretty cynical attitude. Tell me, how close to the reality did you find that to be in Baltimore?
Well, certainly as an attitude is how most cops feel. I mean, I tried my hardest not to get too cynical, but again, I wasn't there that long. If I was there another 18 years, I'm sure I would have been as burnt out as the next guy. There's a little bit of futility because, again, the cops are trying to do the right thing by and large, but when you get caught, the people don't want you there. Most of the ones you deal with. There are lots of people who want you there, but you don't deal with them. It's the criminals who you deal with. They don't want you there. You don't want to be there. So you start wondering, well, why am I here? I mean, the first shooting I handled, the guy who was shot wouldn't even tell me his name, which is, you know, it's par for the course. But at the time, that surprised me. It was like, you're bleeding, you know, to death in the back of an ambulance, and you won't tell me your name. And he's like, I don't play that way. It's like, what way is that? But at some point, you go, look, if you don't want me here, and you're the one who shot, why am I going to try and solve this, you know?
But then eventually, as you got more experience, you realized that most of this has to do with criminal association, et cetera. And did you learn to work that eventually?
Well, yeah. And, I mean, sometimes, most of the shootings don't even make the papers. But the ones that do, you'll see, you know, man was shot, no motive was known. I mean, yeah, I know what the motive was. You know, there's one drug dealer shooting another, or the friends of one drug dealer shooting the friends of another. Or sometimes those are known friends, even. If you're not, there are not that many innocent victims. And, you know, of course, no one deserves to get shot, more or less. But if you don't know who's shooting you, and you're not committing a crime, that's an innocent victim. There are very few innocent victims. It's partly what makes the cops so cynical out there. When you do get a real innocent victim, you're quite excited to help that person to the best you can. it's that field of manure, and you're dealing with the flies.
Okay, Peter, I'm going to take a break and come back because we want to talk more with you and tell people about your book, written by Peter Moskus. The book is called Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. He did this as a sociology graduate, and Peter is today a professor of police science and criminal justice. But while he was an officer on the streets of Baltimore, he was also a scholar, a research scientist. He was doing the policing, and he was taking note of what he was doing for further scholastic application. We'll talk more with him about that. Sounds pretty heavy, but it ain't. All right, it is, but it's heavy for me, but not for Peter. Let me put it that way. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
We're speaking with Peter Moskus. Peter is a assistant professor of basically criminal justice and police science, all of those law enforcement disciplines. And he wrote the book Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. He wrote this as he was doing this sort of field research as a sociology graduate, but he was also a Baltimore City police officer. And there's a section here, Peter, it's at the beginning of the book, but it, man, I tell you, I read it out loud this morning, and I almost started bawling. It's you come back to Baltimore for the funeral of your friend Crystal Sheffield. She was a police officer who was killed in an automobile accident. And you mentioned that the guns are fired in salute and the bagpipes are played, and that at the end of the funeral, a dispatcher from headquarters calls for the fallen officer over all radio channels. The response, of course, is silence. After the third attempt, the dispatcher states the officer is 10-7. 10-7 is the rather unsentimental radio code for out of service. 10-7 usually refers to a car, an officer handling a call, or an anonymous murder victim on the street. To hear your friend and your colleague described as 10-7 is heartbreaking. In this way, the few officers left working the streets know the burial is complete. That's poignant, and it's everything, man. It's the drama of being a police officer. And
Well, she was a good woman, too. So.
And you were a friend of hers. She worked the... Yeah.
I was there during a particularly bad 2 years. I mean, five officers... died on duty when I was there, and she died soon afterwards, backing up another officer. And it's a part of the job. And you hope. I mean, it's sad when any police officer dies, but when you hear it happens, you just hope it's not someone you know and care about. And, you know.
So, Peter, you make a distinction. You make the distinction between lazy policing and good policing that doesn't always result in a high arrest rate. Can you talk about the difference here? And are arrest rates a bad way to judge policing? And I know the answer because because of what you did, and it's in the book there. But tell us about this whole arrest quota thing.
In the police world, arrests are good. I mean, that's outsiders think, you know, that they maybe. I mean, in the police world, there's no such thing as a bad arrest. There's good arrests and there are better arrests. But if you make an arrest, hey, that's good, and that's how cops are judged. As long as you keep, you don't get complaints against you and you make some arrests, you're going to do okay. The problem is that arrests substitute for real good policing. If crime's not going down, they say, there are a couple hundred murders last year. You know, what have you done, police commissioner? And they go, well, we arrested 100,000 people. I mean, so, and does that have any effect? I mean, sometimes cops got to lock people up, but, in the district I work, there are about 45,000 people living there, probably less now. There are over 20,000 arrests every year. It is a scale of lockups that is sort of incomprehensible to those who don't live or work in that area. And it would be one thing if it were working, but it's not. And how can you have a community that has, it's not, there are lots of repeat customers, but still, is it every third, every fourth person getting arrested in a year? You can't have... You can't have community police.
So Peter, it's a bad way to judge whether police officers are being success. It's not a good way to judge the success of police work, correct?
No, but the problem is it's hard to figure out any other. Because you can count arrests, they do. And cops love arrests because it means one thing, which is money. It's not a Baltimore term. It's New York. My students here use it, but they call it collars for dollars. It's the open secret among police departments that when you make an arrest, you're going to get paid for it because you got to go to court, and you get paid for going to court, assuming you're off duty when it happens. If you can go to court every day, you can increase your paycheck by a third. So it's money, and the cops who want to go to court will make a lot of arrests, and the cops who don't want to go to court won't. But the shame it has nothing to do with any greater crime fighting strategy, and it's only in areas that have public drug dealing, like Baltimore's Eastern District, where you can make as many arrests as you want, because they're drug, you can just lock up any junkie you find, because they're gonna have a.
Well, you said it's like tapping out a brush fire. There's a brush fire. It's a bunch of guys dealing drugs on the corner. I'll go over there. I'll stamp out that fire. And then there'll be another one popping up, and we can go over and do that.
The goal is to arrest low-level drug dealers and drug addicts. Police are doing a great job. I mean, and then they, I mean this as a joke, but I mean it seriously. We do that very well. The problem is we're not winning the war on drugs. People are still shooting each other. There are just as many drugs now as before I was a police officer. And they're going to be
next year. I want to ask you, you spent a lot of time in the book talking about this. How many of the arrests get prosecuted? Because you talk about the state attorney's office dropping cases left and right. So these cops are busting people, taking them into court. And a lot of these cases are just getting thrown out, right?
Well, yeah, or there are different levels that get dropped. So the state's attorney, you know, she marches to a different drummer. Her district attorney, whatever they're called, but the state's attorney, they want cases they can prosecute and win. Cops only need probable cause to make an arrest. So you got that, it's a good arrest, but that, you know, the prosecutor needs beyond a reasonable doubt. And so a lot of them just don't rise up to that prosecutorial level. But there are also lots
Peter, I got to run. Peter, I got to run. It's been beautiful. It's been a wonderful half hour. Peter Moskas, Cop in the Hood. Read it. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Thank you, brother.